Saturday, June the 4th, began with a swim with Lyndon, just the two of us. I love to be able to say yes to him when he wants us to be together. But he's the most gregarious man I know, and it was only a little while before he gathered up the bishops and Arthur Krim. We all went riding over the cattle pens to see the Hereford Association of the Hill Country that is going from ranch to ranch, looking at the stock. Dale was out working the pens with the men when we came up with the top down. Everybody began to get their cameras out, and they were saying, "Hello there, Lyndon," rather more frequently than "Mr. President." I think the bishops found it rather astonishing. Betty and Tom Weinheimer were there, and I could thank her for the beautiful yellow roses that are filling my living room today. I slipped away from the group soon to go back and see Linda. I want to spend some time with her and George, because it means something to her, I think, for the three of us to be together. We walked along the river bank, decided it would be best for the shredding to wait till the flowers went to seed in a couple of weeks. Mr. Bishop was with us, a little less than enthusiastic about the high grass and hard walking, but I thought to get the real flavor of the ranch, he should at least go to see the family graveyard and the house where Lyndon was born. I tried to paint a picture of Mrs. Johnson's early days there, a young bride in a rough country, and Lyndon's first 5 years, running away to the river, starting school at 4 and sitting in the teacher's lap. And then I took them over to the dance. As usual, Lyndon, while relaxing, was tending to a great deal of business. Don Thomas and Tom Frost Sr. and Tom Frost Jr. of the San Antonio Bank, Jess McNeil and Malcolm Bardwell, were riding around with him with the top down, getting a lot of sunshine while they discussed their business. It was a gorgeous quilt of wildflowers all over the dance. Indian blanket and coreopsis, the most colorful, red and orange and yellow. Lyndon got out and walked with me to a beautiful spot under the trees and called to Okamoto to get some pictures of the wildflowers. How much it pleases me that because of my interest, he cares enough to point them out to visitors, to be proud of them, to tell all the ranch hands not to grub up the yucca. I called Mary at the ranch, said we're likely to have about 6 or 8 more for lunch, and we'll be home pretty soon. And a little past 1:30, we sat down with a very full table. All the San Antonio contingent, the bishops and Krims, and Linda acting as hostess at the table by the window. Today is the runoff. Together, Lyndon and I went into the courthouse a little before 4. I'll always have a picture of us walking into that courthouse in the summer of 41. Whatever's happened to me in the interim, nothing has ever been more dramatic than the race for the Senate in 1941. Linda and George left early, and I told Linda that I would be in the crowd beaming for the graduation ceremony. She laughed lightly and said, "Mother, I'll be the one in the black gown and the black shoes." There will be 2,400 of them. She's made light of it the whole time. At first, didn't want to come, although I believe deep down in her heart, maybe she did want to come, because it was such a mass production deal. Mickey Mouse, as she calls it. Not quite the sophisticated thing to do anymore. Well, Lyndon and I went in by chopper and arrived in front of Harry's house about 1 minute before the faculty was supposed to start the procession. It was a thrilling sight. A beautiful summer night with clear skies and cool breezes. About 10,000 parents and friends seated in the mall in front of the great main building. Lyndon and I slipped in quietly and took a seat by Warry Lynn's parents. Edith and George were close, and dear Mrs. Hudspeth. There was a little patter of applause as we were recognized. Linda Birdie had been absolutely adamant. Either come just as parents or don't come was what she wanted of us. I looked at my program, and there was Linda under the cum laude group, the School of Arts and Sciences. And it had been 33 years since I'd first graduated, and the campus was full of ghosts. The solemn processional of the professors entered, and all the parents began to crane their necks and look eagerly as the graduates walked down the aisle toward Dr. Ransom at the speaker's podium, and then filing left into their seats. Thunderbird was a few rows in front of us, and in a minute I saw Warren Lynn, the little blue tassel, say she's an education major, and her merry smile. Signs of the times, babies crying during the ceremony, here and there in the soft night air. All across the campus, where there were chairs in front of buildings and up on steps, people were seated. I could hear youngsters crying. Young marrieds on the campus. A third or more of those in graduate school, Linda tells me. It would have been as rare as an elephant when I was on the campus. Another sign, a degree in aerospace engineering. B.A., M.A., Ph.D. I wonder how long they'd been going on. My heart rose in salute that my university was so quick to meet the times. Third, a Negro woman getting a PhD. Nothing in the program said so, but her face clearly said so. We move on. I, who am a little over 50 and was born and raised in deep East Texas, have seen the most miraculous change in the life of our country. Jack Broadnax and his mule have gone to join Uncle Remus. Another interesting thing was the heavy percentage of PhDs from the Middle East and the Far East.
Most of all,
perhaps from India, and among them a woman, Mrs. Lakshmi Umavijaya Tachikanda. Pakistan represented too. Japan represented very heavily. Katsumi Kansaka Nikki. And China heavily represented. Two Chinese women getting PhDs, zoology and botany.
Remember.
We are much favored, at least in getting an education, by the United Arab Republic. Such names as Mahmoud Mohammed El Emery and Mohammed Salah Eldin Badawi Nozier. Bringing out on page after page, nearly always taking chemistry or civil engineering. I hoped for a lot of people from South and Central America, but how could you tell? Unless they listed their country, we with our 10 or 12% of Latin American population. The commencement speaker was Francis Keppel, former Assistant Secretary for Education in the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. I thought he was witty, left a few deep thoughts with us, and was short, all virtues. He urged the graduates to serve some branch of government at some time in their lives. Some of the most rewarding tasks it is ever given to us to do are those of closing the gaps in our progress, of finishing the unfinished business of society. He quoted from my great favorite John Gardner's book, Self-Renewal. And then it was over. The lights of the tower turned orange. This was the moment we'd been waiting for. My heart was in my throat, and I knew Linda's was. And the Texas band struck up the Eyes of Texas, with many of us singing. Linda and I hurried out, so as not to be caught in the crowd. Linda Byrne joined us at the car. There were pictures of us together. For the sake of the press, and perhaps for our own, I should have done it more leisurely, have lingered, have waited for her and hugged and kissed her, like every other mama. But only 2 days away from my bruising brush with the press at Mary's party, my inclination was to simply hurry on. We decided we'd go by the party that Jesse, Karen, and Tom Curtis were giving for Linda, even if for a few minutes. It was at the 40 Acres Club. The press beat us there, of course. We walked in past a cordon, but once in, we felt cozy and ready to celebrate. I thought it was a great tribute to Linda. Chancellor Ransom and his wife came to the party. Anne Clark and the ambassador were there. Barlin and her family, sprinkling of Zetas. Mrs. Hudspeth, who's been irreplaceable in Linda's life in the university. Bill Hitchcock and Joe Batson, the sort of good friends you tell your troubles to. The Deese and Irwins, the wives of the Secret Service men. A cozy, diverse little group of about 50 or so. We had drinks and hors d'oeuvres. And then we flew home, arriving a little past 11, to find our famished house guests, whom I'd specifically instructed to sit down and eat when they got ready, but that we might come home later and eat ourselves, just sitting down at the dining room table, the Crims, the Bishops, and the staff. We sat and talked with them. We left Linda and George, and I later found they had an hilarious time after the party riding around town in Warry Lynn's date's car, which was a red ambulance, 1946 vintage. One of the sweetest things of all was a card for Miss Nolan, Linda's Latin teacher from early days of high school. The legend was in Latin, and so was a sweet message that went with us, so I have no idea what it said. But when Linda Bird translated, it was a sort of dear message. Someone has remembered you across the years and believes in you.